Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're going to be looking at the Gospel of Mark, specifically chapters 7 and 8. And we're focusing on that because there are some really interesting encounters and questions that are coming up in that section. Jesus's authority is being questioned. His mission seems to be taking some unexpected turns. It's an interesting section.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fascinating stuff in those two chapters. We see Jesus interacting with people from a lot of different backgrounds, performing really unique miracles. And he's really wrestling with people who are demanding proof of his divine power. And it's really interesting.
It is. It's a roller coaster ride. You're going to hear about this woman who boldly confronts Jesus and this healing ritual that involves spit. We've got a crowd that's so hungry, they're on the verge of collapse. And then we'll talk about why witnessing all these incredible miracles doesn't always seem to lead to actual faith.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about. What does it actually take for someone to believe? You know?
That's a really good question. Okay, well, let's get started. Let's unpack this first encounter. The Syrophoenician woman in Mark 7:24-30. So Jesus's entire, which is in Gentile territory. And he's trying to lay low, but his reputation precedes him, of course. And this woman, she's a Greek, a Syrophoenician. Some people even call her a Canaanite. She completely breaks all social norms to approach Jesus, which is a huge move, especially for a woman in that culture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, do we have to think about the social boundaries that existed back then? For a Jewish man to be interacting with a Gentile woman in this way would have been considered scandalous.
Yeah, definitely. So she begs Jesus to heal her daughter, who's possessed by an evil spirit. And his initial response is well unexpected. He says, let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs.
Yeah.
It's a little harsh.
It sounds pretty rough on the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah, the children are referring to the Jewish people, and using the term dogs for Gentiles definitely emphasizes that separation between those two groups.
Yeah, it does. But this woman is sharp. She's clever. Instead of getting offended, she fires back with this brilliant reply. She says, Lord, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. She accepts the metaphor, but then she cleverly points out that even those considered like outcasts, they deserve some compassion too. I love her tenacity.
It's really remarkable. It's an act of humility, but also faith. She's not demanding anything. She's appealing to Jesus's mercy. And her response totally wins him over.
Yeah.
He commends her for her faith and he heals her daughter remotely. So he's proving that his power extends even to the Gentiles.
It's such a pivotal moment. It makes you wonder if this encounter was part of a larger plan, like maybe a hint that Jesus's mission was about to expand beyond just the Jewish community.
Yeah, that's a great point. It foreshadows that inclusion that becomes, you know, central to the Christian message later.
Absolutely. Okay, so next we're going to journey to a very different healing in Mark 7:31-37. So Jesus is now traveling through the Decapolis, which is a primarily Gentile area, and he encounters this man who is both deaf and mute.
Yeah, and this particular healing, it's unique to Mark's gospel, and Mark really describes it in vivid detail. Jesus touches the man's ears and tongue. He uses spit, looks up to heaven, and speaks the Aramaic word ephatha, which means be opened.
Wow. There's so much symbolism in those actions. What do you think? What strikes you about this detailed description?
Well, I think Mark wants us to really pay attention to, like, the physicality of this miracle,
yeah.
The very deliberate actions that Jesus is taking. For example, like the spit. It could be a symbol of cleansing or restoration.
Interesting. What about the use of Aramaic, the language of Jesus' people? But he's ministering to a Gentile. Is there something more to that, do you think?
Yeah. Perhaps it's emphasizing the connection between the old and the new. The Jewish roots of Jesus's ministry, even as he's reaching out to these other nations.
Yeah. And connecting this to the bigger picture. I mean, you can't help but think about the prophecy in Isaiah 35:6, where the mute will shout for joy.
Exactly. Jesus is fulfilling those Old Testament promises. But what's interesting is that the crowd's reaction is just pure amazement, much like we've seen from the Jewish crowds. But it's really genuine faith, or is it just awe at a spectacle?
Yeah. That's a question that lingers, makes you think about how we respond to the unexplainable in our own lives.
Absolutely. Do we dig deeper or are we content with just surface level amazement?
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, well, speaking of spectacles, our next story involves a whole bunch of hungry people. In Mark 8:1-9, we encounter a crowd of 4,000 people who've been with Jesus for 3 days with no food. They are desperate.
And the disciples' response is almost funny. They're like, where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed these people? It's like they totally forgot about the feeding of the 5,000.
Right. You would think they would have learned by now that when it comes to Jesus, the impossible is always on the table.
It does make you wonder, are we any different from the disciples, though? I mean, do we fail to recognize Jesus' power even after we've seen these miracles?
That's a good question, something to ponder. So despite the disciples' lack of faith, Jesus miraculously feeds the 4,000 with 7 loaves of bread and a few small fish.
It definitely echoes the feeding of the 5,000. But there are some interesting differences. The numbers are different. Types of fish are different. Even Jesus' stated motivation is a little bit different.
But the outcome is the same, right? Abundant provision defying all logic and expectations.
Precisely. And both times it's about providing for this diverse group, Jews and Gentiles alike.
Yeah, it reinforces this idea that Jesus' compassion and power, they extend to everyone, regardless of their background. It's a powerful message, but not everyone is receptive to it.
Yeah, which leads us back to some familiar territory, Mark 8.1, 11.13. Back in Jewish territory, and the Pharisees show up again, demanding a sign from Jesus to prove his authority.
Like a broken record. You think after 2 mass feedings and all those other miracles, they would have gotten the message?
The irony is so thick you could cut it with a knife. They're like the Israelites in the wilderness, constantly testing God, even though he's been so faithful.
And Jesus is clearly exasperated. He sighs deeply and says, "No sign will be given to this generation."
It's definitely a statement of judgment. They are willfully blind,
right,
refusing to see the truth that's right in front of them. But it makes you wonder, what does it truly mean to see? I mean, what signs are we missing in our own lives?
Yeah, that's a great question to think about. And, you know, that's a great place to stop for today. We've seen Jesus defy expectations and challenge traditional boundaries, even express frustration with those who refuse to believe. It's a complex and nuanced journey that I think really forces us to look inward and ask ourselves some tough questions about our own faith and perception. It's interesting how Mark, you know, he highlights not just the miracles themselves, but the reactions they evoke. We've seen amazement, gratitude, even skepticism. But there's this recurring element that stands out to me. It's these repeated commands for silence.
Oh, yeah. The messianic secret is one of the most intriguing aspects of Mark's gospel. After every miracle, Jesus tells those who are there not to tell anyone what they saw or what they heard.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive.
Right.
Like, if you're trying to spread a message and build a following, wouldn't you encourage people to share these amazing stories?
Yeah, it is kind of a paradox. There are a few theories, though, about this whole secret thing. One theory is that Jesus wanted to avoid any premature or inaccurate expectations about him being the Messiah. Because the way people understood the Messiah back then was very different from who Jesus actually was.
So he wasn't trying to suppress the truth, but more like trying to control the narrative.
Exactly. He wanted to make sure that people understood the real nature of his mission and his authority, which went way beyond just earthly power or some kind of political revolution.
Yeah, and it makes me think, too, that maybe Jesus wanted to shift the focus away from the spectacle of the miracles themselves and more toward the deeper message of his teachings.
That's a great point. It wasn't about just amazing people with his powers. He wanted to change hearts and minds, invite people into a real relationship with God that was more than just superficial.
Right. It's like he's saying, don't just focus on the what, the miracles, but pay attention to the why, the message behind them.
Right. And there's also this sense that Jesus is operating within a specific time frame. You know, he knows where his journey is ultimately going, to Jerusalem, to the cross. And he's not trying to rush that confrontation.
Yeah, it's true. This messianic secret really adds a layer of mystery and complexity to these stories. It's like the silences are just as important as the words.
It reminds us that there's often more going on than meets the eye. We're being challenged to read between the lines, to think about the unspoken messages and motivations.
Which brings us back to that encounter with the Pharisees in Mark 8.11.13. Remember, they come to Jesus demanding a sign from heaven, some big display of power to prove he really is the Messiah.
They're so fixated on their own idea of what a Messiah should be, how God should act.
And Jesus sighs and says, "No sign will be given to this generation." What a statement.
So much disappointment and judgment there. They've already seen so much, the healings, the exorcisms, even feeding thousands of people. But they are willfully blind. They just refuse to see the signs that are right there.
Makes you wonder if we do the same thing sometimes. We want proof, these grand gestures from God. But we miss the everyday miracles and those little signs of his presence in our lives.
Yeah, it's a challenge for all of us to develop that deeper kind of faith that doesn't need outward displays. But it's about being willing to see God working in the ordinary things, the unexpected things, even the hard things.
So what can we learn from all of this, from these miracles met with doubt and these demands for signs?
I think it's a reminder that real belief, it goes beyond just seeing something amazing. It requires an open heart, a willingness to question what we think we know, and a commitment to searching for truth, even when it makes us uncomfortable.
And we see this so clearly in the difference between the Syrophoenician woman and the Pharisees. She comes to Jesus with humility and persistence, and she's open to his unexpected response. But the Pharisees, they approach him with demands and skepticism and this rigid worldview that blinds them to the truth.
Yeah, their encounter with Jesus, it shows us that seeing isn't just about physical sight. It's about perceiving with our hearts and minds, recognizing God's presence even when it doesn't fit our expectations.
It seems like Mark is inviting us to move beyond a faith that's based on spectacle and demands and embrace a faith that's rooted in humility and trust and a willingness to see God at work in the most unexpected places.
That is such a powerful message. And it's just as relevant today as it was back then.
Absolutely. It's a journey of discovery and growth. And as we continue our deep dive into Mark's gospel, I'm really looking forward to exploring how these themes of faith and doubt and perception, they continue to unfold. So we've been talking about some pretty complex ideas in Mark chapters 7 and 8, miracles, challenging encounters, and that struggle to really see and believe. It feels like there's always more to discover, more to think about.
Yeah, that's true. Mark's gospel doesn't shy away from how messy faith can be. It shows the disciples, the ones closest to Jesus, wrestling with doubt and misunderstanding. Even after seeing these amazing displays of power, their faith still wavers.
It's actually really relatable, you know? It reminds us that doubt and questions, they're just part of being human, even when it comes to faith.
Absolutely. And I think that's why these stories connect with us so strongly. We see ourselves in the disciples' struggles. You know, we've all had moments where we question things, where we wonder if we're really seeing what's right there in front of us.
Yeah, for sure. It's comforting to know we're not alone in that. It makes me think about the people who actually saw Jesus's miracles with their own eyes. I mean, what was it like to be there in the presence of that kind of power and authority?
I mean, just imagine the awe and wonder they must have felt, seeing the blind see again, the lame walk, the dead raised back to life. It's incredible. But Mark also shows us that even those extraordinary events didn't always create a lasting faith.
Right. And that takes us back to the Pharisees demanding a sign. They wanted this huge display of power, something that would undeniably prove Jesus' divine authority.
And they were so fixated on what they thought a Messiah should be like, their own ideas of how God should act.
Yeah. And Jesus gets frustrated and refuses. He says, "No sign will be given to this generation."
Yeah, it's such a powerful statement. And it shows us something deeper about faith. Real belief isn't about demanding proof or needing outside validation. It's about an internal change, a willingness to trust and let go, even when we don't have all the answers.
Yeah, it's hard, though, isn't it, to let go of that need for control, to be okay with the mystery and uncertainty that comes with faith.
It is. But that's where true freedom is.
Yeah.
When we let go of that need for proof, we can start to understand things on a deeper level, to connect with God in a more meaningful way.
It's like the Syrophoenician woman. She didn't demand a sign. She just came to Jesus with humility and faith, believing in his power and compassion.
And it was her faith, even when he initially said no, that really moved Jesus. Her story shows us that sometimes the biggest miracles happen when we stop trying to control everything and just trust the process.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into these powerful chapters of Mark A, I keep coming back to this theme of perception. It's not enough to just see something miraculous. We have to choose to really see it, to let it change us.
It's a reminder that faith is an active choice, a decision to look beyond the surface and find a deeper meaning. It's about having a heart that's open to wonder, a mind that's willing to ask questions, and a spirit that wants to connect with God even in the most unexpected ways.
So as we go back to our own lives, the question is, what signs are we missing? Where is God working in our everyday moments, inviting us to a deeper faith and understanding? Maybe the most amazing miracles aren't the ones that defy logic, but the ones that change our hearts and open our eyes to the wonder all around us. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it's given you something to think about and maybe even sparked a little wonder in your own journey.